All righty, 7:34. We got Crime and Justice Radio tonight, ladies and gentlemen. It's one of my favorites every Monday night right here on LA News Radio from 6 to 7. Hosted by the great Bruce Barquette and Ida Leisenring. They, of course, from the great firm out of Garden City called Barquette Epstein. And the better half of the tandem is with us right now. Her name is Ida Leisenring. What a job she does. And it's great to have you solo for a change, Ida. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Bruce drew the short straw, and he's in jail right now doing a visit, hard at work. But here I am talking to you, drinking coffee. So I definitely scored better.
No question. I'll tell you, so much is going on. You got the Valva case now. We haven't spoke to you since. It's going. You have two separate trials now. Happening. One of your partners, John Leturco, will head that whole thing. Come up in the next. Well, you got opening statements coming up, right?
On Wednesday, September 28th.
Unbelievable.
Opening arguments on both sides. They have a jury. Last time we spoke, we didn't even think they'd get a jury, and here they are, ready to go.
I know, it's hard to believe. It really is, but finally underway. And you know, I guess a decision of this magnitude from a judge's standpoint, Aida, is it propelled by backlash, convincing arguments? How do you think the thinking kind of shifted in that regard?
I think what happens is when a judge is dealing with a case that's this high profile, where the allegations are so remarkable, and there are so many parties that have a real stake in the outcome, you try to do the right thing. And when it comes to conflicts, all judges take conflicts very seriously and often err on the side of safety. Here you have an attorney who stated that he had a conversation with the co-defendant, the very co-defendant that you're now pointing the finger at as the guilty person, and that he did his arraignment. Now, he mentioned that he only spoke to Valva for a few minutes, but those few minutes could end up being quite revealing. When you meet with a client, you look at their demeanor, you ask them a couple questions. You may not recall that you talked details about the case, but let's say that, you know, Valva answered, and this is completely hypothetical because it's attorney-client privilege, so I don't know what conversation took place, but say that Valva was not crying during that interview. Now imagine that same attorney confronting him and saying, you weren't even upset, right? So it's not just words that can be privileged and taken and used against you, but also your understanding of how that meeting went, your demeanor, how you reacted, and so forth. So it would be an appealable issue. And imagine if there was a conviction and Valva filed an appeal and the second department overturned the case and it had to be tried again. So I think the judge made the right decision.
You go. No question. I agree. I mean, does it come down to the fact of who actually told that young man, placed that young boy, 8-year-old Thomas, in that garage, you know, 19 degrees and everything else? Is that what it's going to come down to in all of this? Angela Pelina or Michael Valva? Is that where the entire ball of wax is at this point?
Well, I think that there is for sure an isolated incident that the government, the people are claiming caused the death of the minor child. But we're not just going to hear evidence about that incident. We're going to hear about numerous incidents leading up to it. With respect to the timeline, I think both parties are going to look at one another and say, who really took on the role of responsibility? Who pushed these methods, these actions on the children? Who was in control? Who had the greatest influence? Who was working? Who decided to keep the children in the garage for how long, under what circumstances, what were they fed, who fed them, what, you know, were they warned about, who was warned, you know, so it's going to be a complex look at how two individuals raised children. And I suspect that there's going to be finger pointing, but we're going to hear a preview of that on September 28th from John Leturco himself and the prosecutor, who know the facts of the case better than, frankly, I do, than the jury does, than even the judge might. And they're both going to tell you what facts they expect to prove or not to be proven and what to do with those facts, because it ultimately comes down to the elements of the law, whether or not this is depraved indifference murder or something else, whether it's negligent or, you know, whether neither of the elements have been satisfied at all. So we'll see.
Quick synopsis of John Leturco, who might not know the style of the audience at this point. Give us a little dissertation on Leturco and what to expect here.
Leturco is one of the most serious, hardworking lawyers who puts his heart and his brain into every trial and every case that he's ever litigated. I had the great honor of doing my last trial alongside him, and we had a really intense case featuring, talk about nasty, horrible allegations of two teenage girls that claimed that they were raped by our client when they were 5 and 7 years old. Imagine that. But here's the kicker. John Leturco and I genuinely believed in our client's innocence, and not just a gut thing. It had to do with the evidence. It had to do with the evidence we uncovered, and we ultimately got an acquittal. So the right thing happened in that case. But I'll tell you, the hours he put in, the stress on last-minute calls that he faced. At one point, we were wondering whether to reveal our client's tattoo, which actually exculpated him. And there was no way this tattoo could look anything like it was described, but Leturco was stressed out. And I don't mean stressed out that he was incapable, but like that's how seriously he took it, that I think he ran out to an entirely different courthouse and started asking strangers what they thought of an image of a tattoo to get some feedback. I mean, he may as well be wearing a cape, and he's taken on a very difficult case, and he's doing it for the right reasons. He was asked to do it. No one else would come forward. As defense lawyers, we don't always get to choose the cases that we have, but we do our jobs. We defend the Constitution. We hold the government to their burden of proof, and we make sure that the quality of the evidence that comes in and gets introduced in front of a jury is reliable, that it's credible, and that it's legally permissible. Sometimes that results in participation of an exoneration of someone who's innocent. Sometimes it results on the conviction of someone who may be guilty of manslaughter, but not murder. And so the lesser included is what ultimately is chosen by the jury. But it's a tough job. If you're a prosecutor, you may be faced with trying a case where the defendant is innocent and maybe cutting corners, not realizing that you're going after the wrong man. And as a defense lawyer, sometimes you do represent the guilty. It's a caveat on both sides, but that's why we have an adversarial system. The right thing is ultimately supposed to happen.
Well done. Well done. And we look forward to John and this case, and it should be incredible. It really should. Buckle your seatbelts, ladies and gentlemen. No question. Wednesday, opening statements. Aida Leisenring, Crime and Justice Radio with Bruce Barquette. That is tonight, 6 to 7. Who do we have on tonight, my dear?
We have a really interesting guest. We actually have two guests. I don't know if you recall, a long time ago, maybe our fifth or fourth episode when we were first starting out, we were complete amateurs, we had on the Nixian. Nixian was either considered a multi-level marketing company or a sex trafficking, money laundering cult. Whistleblowers, Anthony Nippy Ames, who is actually a friend of mine from boarding school and from Brown University, and his wife, Sarah Edmondson, who were the whistleblowers on this cult, who was led by Keith Raniere, who ultimately was convicted in federal court. We have Mark Elliott, who is an American author and a member of NXIVM, who actually is supportive of Keith Raniere and is putting in his 2 cents to support his conviction being overturned. I think one of the reasons is because Mark Elliott overcame Tourette syndrome with the help of NXIVM. And he has a documentary out where he and 4 people, you kind of follow the path to them being completely cured of Tourette syndrome and other tics that they had, which is pretty incredible. And I think if you go through that experience, you're absolutely going to believe in the program. And I think Sarah and Anthony Ames, who we had on, obviously believe fervently in Keith Raniere's guilt and had a different experience. But even they, too, will appreciate that part of the cult allure was that it could solve certain problems. It did have positive benefits. Otherwise, nobody would be lured by it in the first place. But more interesting, dare I say, is the second guest who's going to be with Mark Elliott, also weighing in on the Keith Raniere appeal. His name is Dr. Richard Kipper. He was 20 years with the FBI, retired at one point chief investigator of training unit, and he will weigh in on how he has witnessed the FBI tampering with photographs and digital forensics and dates and times, these digital stamps on some of this evidence that has been introduced at trials. And we are in a day and age where the FBI appears, at least publicly or in the eyes of the public, compromised no matter what side of politics you're on. There's allegations of FBI tampering with, you know, the Trump ordeal, with the elections of the past, and so forth. So he's going to talk about how this happens, how it's occurred, how he's witnessed it, how he came to this conclusion. And we think it'll be fascinating and relevant for many cases out there.
Tonight, no question. Aida Bruce, Crime and Justice Radio, Parkhead Epstein. Fascinating and great dissertation regarding the upcoming Valva trial and your partner there, Ms. Laturco. Should be incredible. Really should. Always a pleasure to have you. I kind of like having you solo, but that's okay.